WTKN 970. Owen Spann with you. Well, I don't know how to introduce this lady. First woman athlete to earn more than $100,000 in any sport in a single year. First and only woman to win U.S. singles titles on grass, clay, carpet, hard court. First and only woman to have 20 Wimbledon titles. First woman commissioner of any professional sporting league. And if you can remember, if you know tennis, and remember when her name was Billie Jean Moffat.
You know we're going back.
You know we're going back. Billie Jean King. How are you today?
I'm fine. I feel great. It's great to be here. And, you know, we've had a lot happening the last day or two. We have our original nine players that started the Virginia Slim Circuit back. And I haven't seen, you know, a couple of the players for 14 years. So I'm delighted to see some old friends and get caught up. And there's a lot of nostalgia going on.
Talk about that a little. There's a special night tonight in New York?
Right. The original nine that when we started the Virginia Slim Circuit, when Gladys Hellman went out and got Virginia Slims as a sponsor, we had one tournament in Houston, and we signed with her for $1. And right after that, she got sponsorship for a whole year, which was 1971, was our first complete circuit. I think the total prize money was like $350,000. But to do that, we had to take a big risk because it meant being suspended by the association here. And
some of the people were suspended, right?
All of us were.
How dare you women start your own tour?
Well, we didn't have much choice. We got kind of kicked out by the men. They didn't want us on, you know, earning any of their so-called money. They figured that belonged all to them. And then we've been trying to get the association to get more tournaments for us. So it didn't work out. But anyway, we all took a risk. We signed for $1. And in fact, there's some photos out today over the wire service with of the old original one, and then we just stood in the same order yesterday at Tennisport and stood there with our little dollar bill, which is probably worth about 8 cents now, probably if we compared it to the old days. And
prize money in the old days was a ratio of 12 to 1, men to women, right?
Right, it was 12 to 1. But it's just great seeing everybody, and tonight we're going to be presented in at Madison Square Garden after the first match, which starts
with
at 6.
Your walkers and your canes no, and the whole deal?
We're not that old. In fact, I'm probably, maybe Nancy Ritchie is the oldest, but she and I are by far the oldest, and some of them are still in their 30s, but most of them are still working also. We're married and have children and still working, so it's interesting to see how their lives are going.
In the early days, we're talking at the women's tour, what you started in the early 70s. What was the prize money like in those days, or what were the crowds like?
Well, the crowds, we were lucky probably for a week to get 10,000 people, whereas now, at the Garden, this week for the Virginia Slims Championship, so which is $1 million, by the way. Our whole tour, remember, in 71 was for $350,000 for the year.
For the year?
For the year. Not for a week. Not for 4 weeks, for the whole year. And we played about 30 weeks in those, back in those early days. And it's just amazing when you think how far the game's come, because everybody said we wouldn't make it, you know. Back then the media said, what are you women doing? And we didn't really have much choice, but we had a great sense of humor, I must say.
Part of it was the fact, of course, you were women, and the prize money was bigger for men, but Sam Snead was here last week, and he was talking about in the early days in golf, as a man, made $600 for the British Open. It cost him $800 to get there. In his entire PGA lifetime, and he and Hogan won everything, his total earnings were $620,000. He said some of the young guys in the golf tour have won that already this year.
The rookies, right. I think I was averaging, to answer your original question, the first year in 71, I was making like $1,800 if I won the tournament, if I won it. So, you don't win every tournament. And I think the biggest tournament that year, Gladys Hellman got a tournament in Houston for $40,000 total prize money. And I think I made 10 because I happened to win that tournament. And I was trying to make over $100,000 to be the first woman athlete. So I was playing every week. And I knew I had to win that Houston tournament because I knew it was going to be tight. I was going to have to win a lot. And then finally in October in Phoenix during the Virginia Slims tournament there, I played Wendy Overton in the quarterfinals and went over $100,000. And that was the last or second to last tournament of the year. So it was really tight. And I had dinner with Sam Snead a few thousand years ago.
He's a neat guy.
And we discussed not only prize money, but we also discussed the good times. You know, I think what sometimes is missing with the younger players today is they really don't have to deal with their peers. You know, they have their coaches, their mom and dad, their entourages. They go out, they practice, they leave the courts. And I really think they're kind of missing out on a very important part of life, too. And that is getting along with your peers and growing as a social animal as well as just being a great tennis player.
Yeah, I want to talk about that later, the complete dedication of the young player. I'm trying to remember, was it the late 70s? Because you were involved in, was it called World Team Tennis?
Yeah, Team Tennis.
Each city would get a team.
Right.
Not necessarily the local people from
that
area.
Right, we're just like baseball players. They're not particularly from the local.
That's right. Now, that made it in some cities, didn't it?
It was huge. It was a huge success. The reason it didn't make it is because the owners didn't get along. But we had a million people watch it in the summer, which was a fourth of the total tennis audience. And now I'm commissioner of Domino's Pizza Team Tennis, which we're doing recreational leagues. We're in 250 cities throughout the country. We had 8 pro teams this last summer. And what we did to change it, though, is we only have the players playing for prize money. We don't allow them to have salaries because that's where your economics always go crazy. I mean, no business is run like sports business. Sports business is run like a hobby. And I don't believe in that. I think business should be run like a business. And I don't believe in salaries. And I think that's what ruins sports. They should be on their present performance. And you're always paying athletes on their history. You know, they'll come in, they'll have a great year.
Sure.
And then they get come to the bargaining table, and then they just boom, boom, they get all that money. And then they have a horrible year the next year because they relax. Whereas at least in tournaments like this week for the Virginia Slims Championships, we're talking about, you know, you've got to get through each round. And you got to be in the top 16 of the Virginia Slims bonus pool to even get here to New York. So they've been fighting all year to get here, which I like. I like that idea that they had to scramble and really fight to have this big extra bonus for
them. All right, we're going to talk about that. Also about the dedication of the game and the young players of the game. And is Martina going to dominate it forever? Whatever. Billie Jean King, our guest. Owen Spann on Talk Radio.
WWAM 1450, News Talk for Savannah.
May I have your attention, please? Let's not forget what we're here for. To present one of our very best employees with this special award for 25 years of service. Let's hear it for Ann Shea.
25 years? She must have started working here when she was 12 years old.
You're right. She doesn't look a day over 35 or 36.
Look at her. She's so young looking.
What I wouldn't give to know her secret.
Her secret? Porcelana Medicated Fade Cream. The secret of thousands of beautiful women to help get rid of age spots. Used twice a day, Porcelana can make spots hardly noticeable in about 6 weeks or so. There's even a sunscreen formula to help protect spots from the sun while it keeps on fading.
Congratulations, Anne. Mary and I were just saying you don't look a day over 35. How do you do it?
Well, it's mostly luck. Good genes and something else.
Porcelana, twice a day when you're in the habit of looking young. Use only as directed.
If you die without a will, the laws of the state and not you will determine who receives your property and in what amounts. Who manages the affairs of your estate? Your choice as guardian of your minor children may never be known. Your loved ones could face unnecessary legal costs and needless court delays. Regardless of the size of your estate, failing to make a will means taking unnecessary chances. Now, for only $9.95, you can make your own will with a PlanSafe Will Kit. The will forms were prepared by lawyers to be valid in all 50 states. When you order, you will receive simple fill-in-the-blank will forms with easy-to-follow directions. You will also receive an easy-reading guidebook for a full understanding of this most important document, and all for only $9.95 plus shipping. To order, just call toll-free 1-800-445-4000. That's 1-800-445-4000. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back from Security Documents, 281 Butler Street, Brooklyn, New York. That number again is 1-800-445-4000. Please allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery.
Ideas, interesting people, with Owen Spann on Talk Radio.
There was an article earlier this year in the New York Times that talked about a young player Debbie Spence, 16, mm-hmm. number one ranked junior girls tennis player in the country, dropped out of high school, started working on her game 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. It was a grueling solitary life. There was only tennis. The best female pros can now expect to earn between $250,000 in prize money. Total dedication. The costs were overwhelming. The parents spend as much as $25,000 annually to keep their children on the national and international junior circuits. They face the emotional expense of sending a child on the road alone or sending her with a parent, surrendering family life. And the article was just got to me. I read the whole thing. As to if you're going to commit yourself to a sport, and particularly tennis, it seems to be a total commitment. Billie Jean King, First Lady of Tennis, is with us. I'm sure you read this article about this young lady, did you?
I didn't, but I heard about it. It's a book, I think. I think Karen...
Yeah, I think it is, part of a book, yeah.
The excerpt. Well, I think some of the juniors are doing that, and I think it's important when children are growing up that you explain that if they decide to do that, you're talking about a very high-risk endeavor, because probably less than 0.5% make it to any professional sport, for starters. I think that's important for children to understand, whether you're a boy or a girl. And if you make that kind of decision, that kind of commitment, there's no promises. And there's no promises anyway for anybody. You know, I always think it's funny how people think, well, they could do something else. Well, there's still no guarantees you're going to have a job when you grow up. You've got to earn it. And if I would ask Debbie, are you happy? Are you basically happy playing? And here's the things you are giving up. If you still want to give them up, then that's okay. I mean, obviously, this family made this decision, or they wouldn't have done it. Now, it doesn't mean you don't keep reevaluating. Is this really making everyone happy enough? Happy enough? There's no all 100%. Everything has a trade-off. But I think it's tough. When I was growing up, I would give anything to have had been able to play full-time tennis. I was in school a lot. I was taking piano lessons. I had to get great grades. And when I found tennis, my parents really had a hook with me, because anytime I didn't have my room, my bed made and everything organized, I couldn't go play tennis. So, and I loved tennis, so my parents knew they had me. I mean, they had me right over the barrel. But I think I was different in that. Also, my brother Randy Moffitt played 12 years of professional baseball with the Giants, in fact, San Francisco Giants, and then later with the Astros and the Blue Jays. And both of us have commented now that we're much older that how lucky we were, because our parents never really pushed us. We pushed them. I mean, I drove my parents absolutely crazy. Please let me play.
Please let me play.
Oh, I would have given anything to be, for instance, in a Debbie Spence situation. I was absolutely driven, and I loved it.
Just a few months ago, there was some article about Chris Everett Lord, and she said something about, I don't know a thing in the world except tennis. And it was a sort of a sad statement.
Well, guess what, Chris? You're going to get to find out when you quit, and that's okay. But I think Chris does know more than just how to play tennis. I think she probably doesn't realize it, but I think Chris has grown up a lot. I think she's had to understand pressure, and you can translate that into other areas. If you just, you know, as you can associate it as you go through it and say, you know, I was under pressure, and how did I react to the pressure and the stress and everything? And I think she can... That's a lesson that you can learn through sports, and you can use it in your everyday life. And I'm sure Chris has probably been using it more than she realizes.
I bet. Let me open our phones. We have a rare opportunity for you to talk with a lady who's been not only one of the great champions of tennis, but one of the movers to get women's tennis from nowhere to where it is today. Billie Jean King, any questions? Here's how you call.
To call in and be part of today's program, all you have to do is dial 1-800-423-TALK. It's that easy. I'd really like to hear what you have to say. Once again, the toll-free number, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Owen Spann. This is KPSI AM 145.
On a lighter note, I was thinking about, were you Bobby Riggs, the famous man?
I finally got to see The Odd Couple last night.
How many years ago was that?
That was 1973. We're talking about a long, long time ago. And it was so funny because I was just turning the channel last night, and there it was, and everybody kept... I mean, people stop me in New York City all the time. Billy, we just saw The Odd Couple last night. God, it was so funny. And I finally got to see it. So It was funny.
But it worked once. They tried it. Didn't Bobby Riggs try it again with doubles or something like that?
Oh, but that was many. That was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but that evening, the whole nation was watching.
It was, and the whole world, actually, about 80 million people saw that throughout the world. And what was good about it is it really got a lot of new people involved in tennis, both men and women. Also, I think women athletes were more accepted after that day. And I think some women really had a little higher self-esteem after that day. They had a little more guts and a little more courage to go out and maybe say, I can do a lot more than I thought I could. Whatever.
Did you know you could beat him before that match?
No.
With every trick he has?
No. You know why, Owen? Because I never hit a ball against him, so I didn't know. I had no idea. But of course, and then I said, well, you know what? If I haven't hit a ball against him, he hasn't hit a ball against me. So it was a real unknown situation.
In a moment, we'll pick up with your calls and questions of Billie Jean King.
I'm Owen Spann. This is WWAM 1450 News Talk Radio, Savannah.
News Talk Radio, WWAM 1450.
I'm looking at next year's schedule on Virginia Slims. Wherever you live, San Francisco, Boca Raton, Key Biscayne, Hilton Head, these people will be there. They'll hit a community near you. One other thing about when you had the, was it World Team Tennis? What was it called?
Yeah, it was called World Team Tennis.
Okay. We got to see a lot of players we knew nothing about. In Oakland, there was a fellow by the name of Frew McMillan. I'd never heard that name in my life.
I just saw Frew 2 weeks ago.
One of the great doubles players of all time.
Right. Uh-huh. He's still playing well. We played in Fresno it's been more than 2 weeks now.
First time I ever saw Betty Stova was in World Team Tennis.
That's right. And Betty Stova played on the Virginia Slim Circuit for years and got to the finals of Wimbledon and lost to Virginia Wade. And she's won Grand Slam titles in mixed and doubles and everything.
In Pittsburgh. There was a team in Pittsburgh. And there was a young guy playing. Never heard of him. His name was Vita Gerulaitis.
Well, Vitas is well known now, but you're right. There's a lot of players that play wonderful tennis that are not known because people tend to think unless you win a tournament, you're not very good, and that's not the case. If you are on the Virginia Slim Circuit for the women or the Grand Prix Circuit for the men, you have arrived. You are the elite athlete of your sport, just like making the major leagues of baseball or the NFL of football. That is it. And I really get upset because people don't tend to go to tournaments early enough. They could see so many great matches if they go early because it's competitive. These people are trying to get through these first, second, third rounds. But just to get in the first round of this this tournament, Virginia Slim Championships in New York, you've got to be you are top 16 in for the whole year. You know, and so even if you go out on Monday night.
You brought up a neat point. I got to Wimbledon once, and it was the first week.
Right, it's the best week.
That's terrific. You see young players you have never seen before.
You see
particularly on the outer courts out there.
Right, you see all kinds of players, and you realize how many different styles there are and how many countries are represented, and every size, every shape. Everybody's taller now. I can't believe
it. And faster. And hits the ball harder.
The equipment is so much nicer now, too, though. You can hit the ball so much harder with so much less effort. It's just wonderful.
It looks like, what do we call that new oversized racket? With a bigger racket.
They're called oversized rackets.
Yeah. It looks like even a hacker can't miss with that thing.
I mean, I play with a huge racket. It's called Wimbledon racket because I've won so many Wimbledon titles. And I'm telling you, people look at this racket, they go, Billie Jean, this is impossible. And now I look at an old wooden racket, I go, how did I ever even find the ball? I mean, I'd be hitting off the edge of the frame if I tried to play with it now, but maybe we were more, we had to concentrate harder maybe. I guess you just adapt to whatever, but the equipment now is just unbelievably wonderful, and you can hit the ball a lot harder with a lot less effort.
All right, let's take some calls. Got a lot of people want to say hello. Dean, you're on Talk Radio with Billie Jean King.
Hi.
Hi, Dean.
Mr. Jones, hi, Billie Jean. Certainly, I've admired your work over the years, and I'm really pleased that I even remember the Rinks episode. But I think that I want you to study for a moment. You spend a lot of time on this Virginia Slims tour. Hasn't there been enough controversy viewed from many of us in the health field to ask the tennis people take a good look at who's sponsoring this, and is it appropriate for the tobacco industry to be in sports at all?
Now, that's a legitimate question. I'm sure it's been raised before. What about it?
Well, we've only been asked that probably the last 2 years, and you have to remember Virginia Slims has been with us since 1970. You know, we're talking 15, 16 years ago. And I personally do not smoke, but I also believe in freedom of choice, and I always will until the day I die, and I will fight anybody not to have that. So I think it's really got to be a personal choice. I do not believe, well, I believe in some censorship, but not very much. And I don't know where do you draw it, the final thing. I mean,
well, then
I see chewing tobacco on.
Beer
okay, we'll
events.
Do beer, and then maybe we're going to start no red meat because there's, the leanest piece of red meat has 40% fat. And where do you stop, and where do we decide for other human beings what they should? I love that word, should. And I think it's the most important thing is to have the information available, and that each person has to decide for themselves.
There was an ad in the New York Times today, and all it had to do was the tournament. Mm-hmm. It didn't say anything about the cigarettes. But at the bottom of the ad was the Surgeon General says smoking may be hazardous.
Required by federal law, right.
Yeah, and it was just an ad for the tournament, not for the cigarette, but they put that warning there.
Right.
We'll pick up with Billie Jean King, Owen Spann on Talk Radio.
WW AM 1450 News Talk for Savannah.
Billie Jean King with us. It's funny, I knew you were going to be here today, and you may have seen this article about Martina in the Times. For the fifth straight year, Miss Navratilova will finish as number one. Her hold is so strong that a rare defeat is celebrated like a holiday on the tour. She holds every record of everything. Then it says Martina is arrogant, as many great athletes are. but she's also stating the facts when she says, right now, I have no rivalries. I'm a clear-cut number one. There is no suspense. It is not overconfidence. I just believe in my ability. She does completely dominate women's tennis.
She does. She's won 49 matches in a row since the French championships in the spring. And I don't think she's being arrogant with that statement. I think it's probably pretty close to being true. And it just sounds funny when the person themselves say it, you know. But luckily, she can back it up. You know, you never.
Oh, you betcha.
You never mind, like when Muhammad Ali used to talk and, you know, brag.
He'll take a dive in five.
You know, but he backed it up. So then people get a kick out of it. It's when someone brags and then they just keep failing time after time after time. They go, oh, who needs this guy, you know, or this woman? Get him out of here. And, you know, I think Martina's earned it. And it's up to the other players to do something about it. I mean, Steffi Graf, who's playing here this week, is she is really terrific, and I think she's the next person to be watching. And of course, Chris has got a bad knee, and she's had a bad knee off and on. But
with Martina, is it good for the game when one woman is so much better than everybody else? And the only question on each tournament is who will be the opponent, and what will be. How fast will Martina win in the finals?
It's funny. Everybody always says, oh, it's not good for the game. It's not good for the game. You know what? Attendance always goes up when one player dominates. When Laver used to dominate, or Margaret Court, or when I did, or when Chris Everett came along and Chris dominated for so many years. Jimmy Connors, when he was dominating, he was winning, 101 matches out of 104. I mean, on and on. John McEnroe, when he was dominating. Borg, all of them. Guess what? More people come out and watch when one person dominates, and everybody says how bad it is for the sport. And I always laugh because you ask promoters.
They want to see the finalist as the best.
They want to see this player get beaten. They want to come out every night and see the best play, and then they want to see the person get beaten. They're just praying.
They want to see McEnroe lose. They want to see Martina lose.
Exactly. Exactly. And yet, if they would come out earlier in the week, they'd see more competitive matches, which I think are more fun. I'd rather watch a close match, personally, than a blowout, even if they're the best player in the world. I don't really care to watch that. I like to watch things close and tight and see how players react to the pressure and how do they play the big points and just watch their faces and their nonverbal communication and how they handle it. I love watching that. I like the motivation or the psychology behind all that.
Martina has been winning over the American spectators more and more and more.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. She loves this country, and I remember meeting her as a youngster, and she said, Billie Jean, I've always felt I'm an American, and I know I was born in Czechoslovakia, but I just love this country, and not just materially. She says, I love American attitude, how they go for things, they believe in what they do, they get behind causes if they believe in it. She's always... And if you cannot believe how quickly she's... She spoke the language. And with all the right accents. I mean, she has such a facility for languages anyway, but she loves this country. And there's not a better American, in this country. And I think that sometimes I get upset with Americans for not embracing Martina more.
But they are more
it's
and more and more.
Well, how much does she have to win?
I don't know.
I mean,
if she's won everything inside, let's take some calls. Theon, you're on Talk Radio with Billie Jean King.
Billie Jean, your life certainly hasn't been smooth sailing, either personally or your career with the press, but I think you're one resilient lady, and you're definitely a survivor. With what Owen said about Marina Navratilova, I think a lot of what she verbalized was what you have to tell yourself to succeed at tennis. I feel sometimes that people don't win, but the one person loses.
You are absolutely correct. In fact, they've done a lot of research now, and they've got it down pretty well on getting this biofeedback, in that if you draw a circle, and in that circle you write the word challenge, and then on the next circle, next ring right out of there is choking, and the next ring from there is anger, and the next ring from there is tanking. And tanking means I want to get away from this, I can't handle it. And it doesn't matter if it's in your personal life or on the tennis court, you have to keep yourself in that challenge circle. And when you're there, your chances of succeeding are the best. And they found that actually your pulse rate's at a certain rate, that there's actually a certain calmness, you're totally focused, you're totally involved in the task at hand, and that's what keeps you in the challenge circle. And you've seen players when they're choking, and we all do it in everyday life too, is when we're just in that next circle, that next ring, and you care so much, and you feel bad about caring so much. It's almost like you've got to be given permission to say, it's okay, I am choking. And I know when I used to choke, and I still choke, I go, oh, I'm
choking.
Everybody chokes. Champions have choked. They just choke less than others. That's all. That's all it gets down to. And so it's important to say, it's okay, I'm choking. I am so, you know, your hand's shaking, your racket's shaking, your knees are knocking. You've got to throw the ball up. You can't get coordinated. And it's okay to say, I am choking, and I'm going to get myself back in that challenge circle.
And Billie Jean, finally, how do you people function physically when you have, like, almost a broken ankle or a severe sprain? Ice skaters do it. Boxers do it. How do you manage to do that?
Well, I must
say, like a hot August or September afternoon at the U.S. Open, and that mugginess and that sun is beating down, and you're out there a while.
I think it helps because sports medicine has come a long way, really, since I was first playing, and they've got trainers who can run out on the court and at least tape your ankle, and they've got splints now. They've got all kinds of things that can help you, and the players are much more aware. In fact, players don't play as much when they're injured as when we were playing. And the difference is they know better, and also the opportunity is better. You don't have to play a tournament. See, when we were starting the Virginia Slim Circuit, I mean, I can remember getting a call from a promoter or from people and say, well, if you don't play next week, we don't have a tournament. And we don't care how sick you are or how much, what your injury is. And you know that whether Chris shows up this week or not is not going to make a difference. And that's a great sign that the product's there, that the players are that good, and that our sport has grown to that magnitude. And that's what's really important. But
although the promoter's nightmare is,
that is
you go into a tournament and your stars get upset by nobodies
that's
in
true.
The first couple of days, and you're going into the whole week, and the promoter must be saying, oh, my God.
Well, I think that's the risk a promoter, you know, takes. I mean, I'm a promoter. I still own part of the Virginia Slims of Oakland. And Larry and I and Michelle Cavalli, I don't know if you know in San Francisco, he is still part owner with Jerry Diamond, and we own that tournament, and we took a risk back in 71. We lost some money. We lost some money the first couple of years, and now it's making some very good money. But I personally, because I've played, know that when I invest in something, I never worry about whether a top player is going to win or not, because I know if you worry, get your knickers in a twist or whatever, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. You just, if you're going to promote this, that's the deal, and just hope everybody shows up, everybody's healthy, and everybody plays, and if your top seed gets beaten, too good. Keep going. Next year.
Next year. We'll pick up with Billie Jean King.
This is WWAM 1450 News Talk Radio. I'm Owen Spann.
I don't do my job as well when I'm constipated, and that's why I rely on Dulcolax.
Roger Heckel talks about constipation and Dulcolax laxatives.
Dulcolax is predictable and reliable and allows me to plan my daily activities without worry. It's a good feeling knowing that Dulcolax has solved the problem for me, and I don't worry about it the rest of the day.
Dulcolax suppositories can work in 15 minutes to 1 hour. Dulcolax tablets predictably overnight. For occasional use, use only as directed.
Want to really brighten someone's Christmas? Well, Rayovac and True Value Hardware Stores can offer suggestions that make lighting products a practical holiday gift. For a do-it-yourselfer's workshop or a driver's glove compartment, get a Rayovac Workhorse flashlight for just $4.29 with a powerful Krypton bulb and heavy-duty batteries. And for electronic gifts and toys, wrap up the smart pack of Rayovac heavy-duty batteries. Get a pack of 6 C or D cells or 8 AA batteries for only $2.29 at most True Value Hardware Stores.
Thank you.
Billie Jean King with us. We're talking tennis. The early rounds, though, and I realize any top seed can get knocked off, but at the same time, there's an interview. Jimmy Connors was interviewed, and he was asked, at the same time in these early rounds, don't you have one heck of an advantage? In other words, here's the young player, and he's playing Connors, or playing Billie Jean King, or playing a name. And that's got to give the name player an edge right there.
I think it depends on the youngster you're playing. The ones who are going to be the future champions.
Oh, my God, I'm playing Billie Jean King.
Actually, it hurts the top player. It's like Borg always loved Laver. Laver was his hero. And guess who Laver had the worst time beating? Borg. Borg was beating Laver. Well, I mean, the years apart were great anyway. It's not really fair.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. Borg played better against his hero than any other older player when he started to play. And Laver said, God, he's up on me. You know, I mean, he says, yeah, but you're my hero. And I want to show you that I can play just like you. And I remember playing against Chris. Chris always played very nicely against me. I said, Chris, I really don't like the fact that you're playing so much. She said, well, I've always admired you. And I'm going, oh, great. You know, I wish you'd admire me less. But it's true. And so sometimes it can be an advantage because it's a new experience for the youngster and they are nervous because they're playing against the name player. And it's a new environment to walk on a center court. Like, I mean, can you imagine, for instance, Melissa Gurney is in the Virginia Slim. She just made it, okay? She's from Southern California. And I know when she walks on that court at Madison Square Garden, she's going to go, oh, my.
Oh, my.
It's more or less almost the occasion as well as the player you're playing and getting used to that big of audience and the importance of the event. You know, so there's a lot to it. But you have to start someplace because I remember my very first match I ever played at Wimbledon, I played center court. My very first one. I remember how excited I was to be on center court. I couldn't wait. But I love the history of tennis. I love it. I mean, I knew that Tilden had been there and Budge and Langland and Marvel and all the great players. And for me, I thought it was just a privilege to be able to walk on that center court and think of all the great matches, the heartache that had happened on that court, and the winning and all the different things that may have gone on. And that even World War II had been bombed. You know, I mean,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, center court.
The club
had
been bombed?
Yeah, the center court was destroyed to a certain degree. And I mean, all that just flashed through my mind when I walked out there. And so it's exciting, though, because as a child and you're growing up and you want to be a professional athlete, those are the moments you dream about and live for. So when you get there, you better like it and love it and enjoy the pressure because that's
and
the whole
thing. And you paid your dues to get there. Let's take some calls. Pete Owenspan, you're on Talk Radio with Billie Jean King.
Thanks, Owen. Hi, Billie Jean.
Hi.
Since Owen brought up the Riggs match, I have a related question.
Yes?
I've always been curious about the level of women's play, and since Martina is so dominant today, I'm wondering, in your opinion, where would she be competitive if she were to play the men's level? I mean, at what level of men would she be competitive if the rules were the same?
First of all, it would depend on the type of court they were going to play the match on.
In her favor.
In her favor? I'd have to look at the list of men players because I'm sure against a certain male.
What does she play best on? What surface?
A fast court.
Fast court.
Right.
Okay. Would she be competitive with anybody in the top 10?
Probably not.
Top 100?
Oh, yeah, top 100. And, you know, the men would tell me I'm crazy. They would probably think the top 1,000. And I've got news for you. The women are a lot better than people think, and they underestimate. But the only fair way is for Martina to have been able to play against boys in competition from the time she was born and to have the same acceptance, encouragement, and opportunity. And guess what? There's no such thing.
I can understand.
And never
that.
Will be, probably.
It might be. Someday.
Yeah, I understand. My feeling is that she's probably a lot better than she plays, and there's no real way to test her.
That's right. And if she played against men that were better than her day in and day out, her game would get better. The important thing I've always felt is that a human being reached her full potential. Maybe I wouldn't have been number one in men's tennis, but I would maybe have been a better tennis player. And that's got to be a great feeling.
I admire you.
Thank you very much for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right. Our guest, Billie Jean King, and we'll be back.
I'm Owen Spann. This is WWAM 1450 News Talk Radio, Savannah.
News Talk Radio, WW, AM 1450.
We're talking about tennis. Billie Jean King here, how the game has changed. We're talking about today's athlete is better, the equipment is better. And you were also mentioning that your parents did not have to push you. You wanted to play tennis. Oh. And yet you look now at Becker and some of these people, and there's their professional coach sitting two seats back or whatever. And you get the feeling that what you were talking about no longer exists, that everything is computerized. There's the coach right there. What about this?
I think they should put the coaches down on the court. You know how they have them up in the stands,
yeah,
and it's against the rules, and yet if the camera goes to the coach, I mean, you see all these signals, and they're pointing backhand, forehand. I'm thinking, why are they doing that? Just put them down on the court and let them tell the pupil or their child or whatever. Just let them tell them what they think they should do, because every other sport has coaches, really, when you think about it, just about.
Did you have a coach?
I had a coach, but he didn't go with me. I learned through the public parks in Long Beach, California, Clyde Walker, and he just taught at the recreation parks in Long Beach, and so he could not go with me. And he felt it was important that he didn't go with me, because he said, I want you to be an independent thinker. I want you to know how to think. When you're on the center court at Wimbledon or at a tournament, you are not going to have me. You have to hit the ball. I can't do it for you. So I thought he gave me some great advice. But I still think today they're all cheating so much, according to the rules are cheating. And just put them on the court.
Just,
I mean, they're waving and pulling their earlobes
and
their eyelashes.
Well, then the other question is, you got a match. Let's say you were playing Chrissy or Chris is playing Martina. Now, there are no tricks. You've all played each other a thousand times. You know the other person's game up one side and down the other. So what determines who's going to win that day?
People have a real misconception that we try to intimidate or psych out our opponent. We have enough trouble getting our own act together. It's the person who can execute under pressure that's going to win. It has nothing. They try to focus on what they have to do. Martina thinks about what she has to do. Steffi Graf thinks about what she has to do. You got enough problems. You don't have to worry about your opponent. You're right. You only study them to know their strengths and weaknesses. But really, am I getting my first serve in? Am I getting close enough to the net on my first volley? How's my execution and my technique? Am I doing what I'm supposed to do? That's number one. And that's what champions do better than anybody else. And yet the public so often says, oh, God, don't you try to figure out your opponent? You're going to do this, you're going to do that. I said, if I do all that, your mind can only think of one thing at one time. So if you try to be doing all that, you got no chance.
Well, plus, you've played this person 1,000 times.
You're right.
You know their game.
The first time you play somebody is the toughest, because you're trying to figure out, they'll fake you out, they'll hit a shot you didn't expect. But you remember it, and you put it in your book, just like a pitcher, hitters, just the same thing. We know everybody, but you're right. Chris knows my game, I know Martinez, and all these players this week playing the Virginia Slims Championships probably played these players at least, three, four, five times. So they got a handle on each other's game.
All right, let's take a call for you. Ron, you're on Talk Radio with Billie Jean King.
Yes, how you doing, Billie Jean?
Fine, how are you?
Yes, I wonder if you could clear something up for me.
I once
called the doctor on the radio here about a chronic tennis elbow, and he told me that professional players don't get tennis elbow. Is that true?
That is not true. We certainly do get tennis elbow. Not often, but I know I had a one for a year and a half, and I can tell you the only way I was able to play is lift weights. Three times a day, I put like books in a bag when I was on the tour, and I would lift weights in all different directions for my wrist, and I would shorten the range of motion. I wouldn't get too heavy a weight, but I would do it as much as I could. And before I would do that, I would ice my elbow for 7 minutes, and then afterwards I'd ice for 20 minutes. I'd do that three times a day, and then I would tape my forearm. You've seen those things you can put around them, but I had to actually tape it. And that's the only way I got better. And what happens, people take a lot of time off. They take 6 or 8 weeks off and let it, what they think, heal. They pick up the racket and they go right back out on the court and do it again, because what's happened is your muscles have atrophied. Your muscles atrophy within 48 hours, okay? If you're not, if you're used to exercise, then you quit exercising, you sit around for 2 days. I'm telling you, so what you should do is rest for 6 weeks if you can do that. And then you should go lift weights for your arm very gently. Do three sets of 10 or 12 and three times a day and ice it and then pick up a racket and then go back out.
I had heard, fact or fiction, this was years ago, for the weekend hacker, not you pros, that you were more apt to get tennis elbow from a metal racket, that a vibration would go up your arm when you would hit the ball and you were better off with a wooden racket. Have you ever heard that?
I've heard that, but I have no idea. I really don't know. I don't have the knowledge of that. All I know is that you've got to lift weights and you've got to take care of it.
Good to see you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Owen.
Good luck, Billie Jean King.
Virginia Slims tournament underway, coming to a city near you, or probably your city. Owen Spann on Talk Radio.